I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
It's a special edition.
I've got a stomach pain,
a special before school edition of Dr. Kevin Most. Of course, we weren't on yesterday, Doc.
He's from Central.
And you're sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, as always, making people better by making medicine better. Where are you today?
Today's my clinic day, actually. So I get to get away from meetings for a portion of the day and get to actually see patients, which is makes my day a little bit more fun.
Yeah, I know you you enjoy this and you miss it when you can't do it. By the way, I want to publicly thank Doc. Doc was nice enough to host me at the world-famous Chicago Golf Club the other day. And we had a few good shots here and there, but mostly we were spending time looking for his brother Brad's ball.
Oh, I thought you were going to say bonding, like guy bonding.
No, we're hanging out. We had a great time.
We did. Just great company. You know, playing with Brad and playing with Mike Catchmer just makes for a very enjoyable day, regardless how you hit it.
Now, the other day, I also got a note from your older brother, Kurt Most, world-famous Kurt Most, fan of the program, and a pal and a buddy. And Kurt said that you should get some sort of Shot of the Day award because you and the Most brothers were playing golf the other day, and you apparently drained a 50- or 75-foot putt. There were three items. I don't remember the third, but the one crucial item was you hit Kurt, your brother, on one bounce in the shoulder.
Yep.
Well, where was
wasn't
he?
Even aiming.
Where was he standing?
He was standing in the fairway, and I was behind a few trees. Yeah.
Did you do what any brother would do? Did you go, you got in the way, the ball would have been 60 yards farther down?
Well, I did. When I went up, I said, okay, I hit you, so where would it have ended up if you'd not been in my way?
Nice.
Oh, and by the way, are you okay?
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you again. And Chicago Golf Club, wow, incredible, as always. All right, so listen, let's start with Houston here. This polluted, skanky, nasty water has house parts in it, apartment parts in it, building materials, drywall, raw sewage, rodents, reptiles, pieces of pavement. This is not dissimilar, is it, to the potential damage that was caused by the pile on 9/11?
Yeah, you go right along that and go to Katrina as well, and it's just amazing. We see the pictures, and we just can't fathom it. I mean, look what Lake County got. What, they get 7 inches in 24 hours or something?
Yeah.
And we compare that to this, and the health impact of this is going to be huge. But just amazing when you think about your own garage and 4 feet of water in that and what chemicals and what paints and toxins that would be sitting in. And the companies that are opening that have chemicals exposed as well.
So obviously the EPA needs to be on this, and they have to do whatever they can do to keep people out of it. You certainly don't want to see kids playing in it. You want people to avoid it at all costs. But in the meantime, there's a tremendous amount of medical attention that's going to be need to be paid, not just to people who fall ill because of this water, but to people in general who are dealing with all of the nastiness that comes from this storm. So what are the hospitals doing? I mean, are the hospitals all open?
The hospitals are getting back to being open. A lot of them were expected to be open in the next 2 weeks. But when you really stop and think about it, hospitals that are closed, it's not as easy as, oh, the water's gone, let's open our doors and get back. You know, you have to worry about the facility itself being clean. I can give you an example. Our Lake Forest facility had to close for a couple of days because it flooded. And it took us 4 days to get the state back in there to say, okay, we're going to give you the blessing to open up again. So you can imagine the burden down there. There's so many companies that are doing, you know, the work to clean it up. The strain on those companies of regular hospitals, as well as businesses saying, hey, ServPro or ServiceMaster, we want to hire you to come in and make our place clean again. So, and the staffing, trying to get your staff, these nurses and doctors, their homes are underwater. So how do we get the staff back in place?
So you use an analogy in the notes you sent me, which I think is interesting. There's 73 hospitals in Cook County. They're not all acute care, but imagine if 25 to 50 of them had to close. Because the average, you know, in hotels it's called the occupancy rate, but the average, I don't know what you call it in hospital terms, but the amount of beds that are used for a hospital, what is it, two-thirds most of the time probably?
Yeah, probably a little higher than that. You know, we probably run closer to 80% occupancy, you know, in down season. In the flu season, we're probably up in the mid to upper 90s, if not higher.
But, so if you shut down a third or more of those, that's a problem.
Correct. You know, when we shut down for a day, it's called going on bypass, meaning we don't have critical care beds or we don't have beds, and we have to inform the state that we're going to go on bypass. What happens there is a few patients are shifted to hospitals that are in very close proximity to us. So if you think about that now on a widespread thing like Houston, they were moving patients not 5 miles, not 3 miles. They were moving patients hundreds of miles. So difficult for the patients, difficult for the family members, and think about the care that was disrupted. You know, we had a patient, you're in the middle of a treatment plan, now you're going to a hospital 50 miles away with a new doctor, new facility, and a new plan.
We come back, Andrea's back from her week, and she's got questions for you, and I want to continue with this. And continue to talk about some of the other health concerns that these folks are going to have to be dealing with, because you got to believe the mosquito problem is going to be through the roof.
Mm-hmm. Dehydration.
Hot weather and all that standing water. 720, more of Dr. Kevin Most just a second, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. Show number 981. Putting plans together for show 1000. Lots of people involved. Big, high-level meetings. I'm not invited to any of them, but I'm told they're going well.
I was going to say, they are going well. We haven't seen you with them.
725 now. Let me go back to Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better.
Doc, we are talking about in Houston what to do. What happens when you transfer patients from one hospital to another? There's a new team, new doctors. Are you always on standby? God forbid, if something should happen, do you have extra supplies? How do you prepare for something like that? Again, God forbid something like that happens here, but what if it had to happen?
Yeah, and it's a great question, Andrea, and a lot of lessons were learned with Katrina. If people remember with Katrina what happened and the upset that a lot of people had with the way the patients were treated and how they were transferred. And we, even here in Illinois, we practice this. We practice on a possibility of a mass evacuation. But probably more importantly is think about each of those hospitals that had to evacuate or could not get supplies. So a lot of companies have just-in-time, you know, for their inventory management. They don't want to hold a bunch of supplies. They don't want to hold inventory in a warehouse. And the hospitals are the exact same. So we get supplies every single day delivered to us. The impact of us having at least 3 days, if not closer to 5 days, supplies on hand is very important because of things like this. You can imagine that first week, trucks couldn't get in there. You couldn't get supplies to these hospitals. So they had to have something. And then we had generators. Every hospital has backup generators with enough fuel to run for 72 hours. But that went through pretty quickly. So it was quite a mess. But I think kudos to the whole state of Texas and how they rallied together to have a minimal impact on the health, at least for those individuals.
Yeah, and there's certain things there's no way you can prepare for. I mean, I remember we had a 17-inch rainstorm in the western burbs back in the mid-90s. And this is three times that. And I've never seen that much rain. 17 inches in, you know, a day and a half. 51 inches. You can't plan for that. That's biblical.
Yeah, you can't. And the companies, the other companies can't plan for it either. You know, we can't say, oh, my gosh, I'm not going to be able to get to that hospital. I need a boat to deliver supplies. Well, you know what? All the boats were being used to, you know, evacuate people and working on the health of those individuals. So it certainly was a disruption, and it will hurt. I mean, volumes are going to be down at all these hospitals for quite some time, and costs are going to be up. So the financial strain is going to be there as well.
We're 10 days down the road. Is there a chance we'll find any survivors at this point?
Yeah, you know, I think you're going to find a lot of patients who got great care at other hospitals and were brought back to their home communities and hospitals. And I think you're going to hear some really good stories about the excellent coordinated care that was done safely for patients that were critically ill.
Well, that's great. Now, the insect problem, mosquitoes. I remember when I lived in Minneapolis for 5 years, there were gangland mosquitoes. The Minnesota mosquitoes, they had little bandanas on their heads. You know, some of them were flying, carrying boom boxes because it was the 90s. These mosquitoes in Houston, are these going to be disease-carrying types?
Yeah, That's probably the biggest concern. So, again, we go back to Katrina as one of our baselines, and we saw that with Katrina, the number of West Nile cases after Katrina doubled. So here you've got, it's going to be 93 degrees today in Houston. You got standing water and heat, which, you know, the recipe for let's get as many mosquitoes as we possibly can. And you have a lot of birds now that are feeding and eating on stuff on the ground, which is the other vector for West Nile as well as Zika. And you will see a big bump up here. So not a lot we can do. We've cut back on mosquito abatement across this country, and it's going to be interesting to see what the impact is.
Mold, obviously a huge problem wherever there's water. Who makes the call on whether or not a house has to be leveled?
Yeah, you know, the difficult part about a lot of the housing issues right now is it going to be structural where the insurance company comes in? But to be honest with you, it is going to be the mold, because you have, you know, drywall, and people say, oh, well, we'll repair the drywall. Well, they cannot get rid of all the mold spores that are going to be behind these walls. There's not enough bleach in Texas to take care of this issue. And now you're going to start to see the impact of that as, again, this heat comes up. So people with respiratory illness, with asthma, for anybody who has allergies to molds, it's just not going to be a safe environment in many homes and many businesses for quite some time.
What was the other mosquito question?
West Nile and Zika. I know those.
Yep.
We've talked about those in the past, but could this maybe be a resurgence of that?
Absolutely. You're going to see a lot of West Nile, I'm sure, coming up. You know, when Katrina hit, boy, West Nile went through the roof. Zika, in its infancy coming into the States, now is going to have an opportunity, as these mosquitoes are just going to be huge in numbers.
There's a tremendous amount of money involved in this, and, you know, a stress and strain on the healthcare and insurance systems, but on the greater economy in general. This is the fourth largest city in America, right behind us. And you can imagine if a third of Chicago were underwater, what that would be doing. So a lot of this is still to be told, but it makes for a very interesting study on the effects of global warming and, you know, what we maybe need to do to go forward on it. You have to look at some sort of positives to come out of this. I suppose it's an ongoing research project, right?
It is, you know, and it's going to, again, just reinforce the importance of coordination of care in a disaster. Like I said here, you know, tornadoes hit here, impacts here, impacts can be felt anywhere across the country, whether it's a hurricane, whether it's a blizzard. So from a healthcare point of view, we look at things totally different than a lot of other businesses, because they can't just say, let's just shut down. So we have to make sure that we can ensure that we can take care of these patients safely, transfer them safely, and be ready for to take in patients from other institutions if needed. So, you know, training. And like I said, kudos to the state of Texas and the emergency management there for what they did, because, like you said, this is something that you're going to see in not one lifetime, but probably five lifetimes.
I'm way late here, but I got to ask you this because it's a major news story. The nurse in Utah, this is totally separate here, but the nurse in Utah, yep, who was doing her job and told the police officers, I can't draw blood in this circumstance, and then was taken out and arrested. Anything we're missing on that story?
No, I think, you know, people are going to say, wait a second, what do you mean you can't draw blood on someone that's not conscious? And that nurse was following physician orders of the hospital policy. And when we draw blood on individuals who are unconscious, we're drawing blood to see what we can do to make sure that we can treat what's going on with them with their illness. If she was being asked to draw blood for another reason, and it did not impact the health of that individual, kudos for her for standing up and doing what she should have done. She could have done harm to that patient, so she was doing the right thing and following. And we need to be the backing of these nurses to say, do the right thing for the patient at the right time.
The hospital security sort of stood down when the police were there. I don't know if that's standard operating procedure, but it was disappointing to see the other cops on that patrol didn't step up when this guy was clearly out of control.
Yeah, definitely. And that what you said initially is true. You know, hospital security is not the police force. Hospital security is there to hopefully slow down or eliminate some of the issues with patients and families, but they're not the enforcement. They're not there to do that portion of it. So when police officers come in for a condition like that, hospital security steps back. So we try to de-escalate, and then at the point where the authorities come in, we step back and allow them to take over.
All right, just looking for some clarification. Obviously, patients get their blood drawn in an unconscious state all the time, but this could have gone to criminal evidence, too. So it appears the nurse did everything right, and we'll see where it goes from here.
The impact of her having to do it in that exact moment, not necessary.
Right. Yep. The cop was clearly out of control. Thank you. Appreciate it, bud.
You got it. We'll talk to you soon.
Dr. Kevin Most, Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better.